Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Global Cancer Symposium 2.0. My name is Nathan Crane. I am the award-winning filmmaker of Cancer, The Integrative Perspective, as well as the director of the Health and Healing Club. You can learn more about that at healthandhealingclub.com. But today, I'm really happy to bring you Dr. Nathan Goodyear, and we're going to talk about prevention, cancer prevention, as well as some of the most effective habits to help you reduce your cancer risk. Now, this interview is going to be really helpful whether you have cancer and you're really or you've overcome cancer and you're trying to prevent a recurrence, I should say, or you have a family member or a friend or somebody that you want to share this with who you're interested in supporting them in preventing recurrence, or just you yourself. You want to stay on top of things. You want to be proactive and you want to prevent, do the things, you know, to help you support preventing cancer to the best of your ability. So what you're going to learn today is going to be really practical and really give you some tools to take away. You can start making some powerful changes to implement in your own life starting today. I'm going to read you Dr. Goodyear's bio, and then we're going to dive right in and get to some really good nuggets of wisdom, I should say, to help you on this journey. So Dr. Nathan Goodyear's passion for wellness began with his own 100-pound post-college football career weight loss. He lost 100 pounds after college football. That's huge. Dr. Goodyear is dedicated to disease prevention, disease resolution, and to the wellness lifestyle through a solution-based integrative medicine approach founded in science. Dr. Goodyear received his Bachelor of Arts from Louisiana Tech and his Doctor of Medicine from LSU Health Sciences Center. He's board certified in obstetrics and gynecology and served as the chief resident of obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Tennessee. Dr. Goodyear's practiced integrative medicine since 2006 and is a fellow in functional and regenerative medicine and served on the board of the American Functional Medicine Association. Dr. Goodyear is licensed by the Arizona Homeopathic and the Integrative Medical Board in Arizona. He's also the medical director at An Oasis of Healing in Mesa, Arizona. Dr. Thomas Lodi, who owns An Oasis of Healing, who is in Thailand most of the time, is also a part of this symposium. Make sure you go listen to that interview right after this one. Or if you already listened to it, I'm glad you're listening to this one as well. And you can find Dr. Goodyear at An Oasis of Healing, anoasisofhealing.com. Dr. Goodyear, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Nathan. Thank you for what you do.
It's my pleasure and my honor to have you here with such a prolific background of experience in science and integrative medicine and functional medicine. And, you know, I think what you're going to share with us today is going to be really helpful on a lot of fronts. And, you know, I'd love to dive right in based on all your years of training in disease prevention specifically. What have you found to be some of the top causes of cancer, right? We're talking about prevention. We need to know what we're preventing. Cancer is an end result, right? It's a symptom, if you will. And so what causes that?
Well, you know, if you look at everything from a cancer perspective, you know, up until about 20 years ago, it was a purely somatic, a genetic mutation disease. So basically you're born, the cards you're dealt, it's like you're born to be 6'2", you're born to be 4'8". Cancer is the cards you're dealt. Now, what we didn't recognize at that point was that our DNA, our genetic code, was influenceable. It was malleable. Now, you can't change the genetic code per se instantly, but you can change the genetic expression instantly. And so things that were borne out through history about, you know, diet, exercise, activity, weight, all of these quote-unquote lifestyle manners that we group together as lifestyle changes, what we've discovered here recently is what they're really doing is they're working and changing the genetic expression. So in terms of preventing disease, as you acutely said, is that a lot of the same therapies that we'll use in the treatment of cancer, obviously more aggressively, more targeted, we're going to use them to prevent cancer. You know, perfect example is there was a study from this earlier this year looking at three groups of people and their basal body temperature. First was around it was Civil War veterans, then it was the mid-70s, and then it was 2000s. What they found in these three people groups, amazingly enough, they actually found a thermometer, some thermometers back from that post-Civil War era, and they were able to calibrate them and make sure they were accurate. But what they were able to find was that in these three groups, the basal body temperature of the adults decreased predictably, consistently, but decreased from 98.6 degrees in the post-Civil War to 98 degrees in the year 2000. So when we talk about 98.6 degrees, the basal body temperature average, that was correct 150 years ago. It's not today. So basically, lifestyle changes and all these metabolic things that integrative medicine talks about, they are the driving forces to prevent chronic disease like cancer, but they're also the driving forces to prevent other diseases like diabetes, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, but they are also the means to attack, to work, to heal the body at the same time. So lifestyle choices like nutrition, like exercise, like stress, like hormones, so thyroid. Everybody talks about thyroid, but what I'm talking about here is how it actually generates heat through the mitochondria. And that's probably what we've seen over that 150 years is that we've seen a decline in the basal heat production. And out of that, we've seen an inverse increase in things like cancer. And in many cases, for example, mistletoe. Mistletoe is a treatment that's been around for 100 years. Standard of care in Europe, not so much here in the US. They just haven't read the science yet, that's all. But that therapy is a therapy born out of generating warmth, out of generating heat. When you look at what I think is one of the many very important answers to cancer prevention and cancer treatment, it's the immune system. And one of the cardinal symptoms of the immune system and its effects is heat production. So lifestyle changes that we just discount and look at them as it relates to being overweight or not, those are the same ways that we can attack the prevention of cancer, but also the treatment of cancer.
So what you're saying is, this is the first I've actually heard this, which is pretty mind-blowing, is that our average body temperature since after, you said, the Civil War?
Civil War veterans.
Has decreased 0.6%, and that's directly associated with an increase in cancer risk.
Well, it's decreased 0.6 degrees over
0.6 degrees, yeah.
But it's a consistent decline. But when you look over that same time frame, what you see is an inverse increase in diseases like cancer.
Wow.
And what we know about cancer is that it's going to be associated with a lower metabolic rate. It's going to be associated with a lower energy output. I mean, there's many different causes of cancer that have to come together like a 5 billion piece jigsaw puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
But one of those is metabolic dysfunction. And out of that and mitochondria, you'll get lower energy and heat output.
So I want to go into more depth in that in a moment, but I want to go back to what you said earlier about genetic expression, right? Because this is such an important thing, I think, for people to understand, because, you know, you have these oncologists that a woman has a BRCA1 gene and they're saying, cut off your breast to prevent cancer, right? Or they're saying, oh, you know what, you have a cancer gene, you're going to get cancer. And people have this thought that, oh, it's because it's in my family. Oh, it's because it's genetic. But what the evidence actually shows, at least what I found, and I'd love for you to expand on this and correct me if I'm wrong, but actually most cancer is, you know, less than 3% genetic, that meaning that 97% of cancer can all be related to lifestyle choices and lifestyle habits.
Yeah, I think the good way to look at it is it's an assessment of how your genetic code and the expression of it is interacting with the environment that's in your body.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about lifestyle, what you're really talking about is affecting the environment in your body. You know, when we talk about toxins and toxicants, we're talking about how they're changing the environment of the body. And in the changing of the environment in the body, with that context of a small percentage that is actually genetic mutation, somatic, But that'll vary from cancer type to cancer type. Some of the earlier manifestation of cancer, so maybe a childhood cancer or a teenage cancer, you'll have a little bit more of a stronger genetic component. But most, you know, middle age and later adult cancer types, you're looking at actually a environmental, a terrain, a body change as a result of lifestyle over the years that interacts and changes genetic expression. When you look at cancer, it's really interesting. Cancer is going to manipulate its environment for its own survival. It's like a parasite in a way. It behaves like it. It's like a virus in a way. It behaves like it. But what it's doing is it's taking its environment and using its environment to feed itself and support its own survival. And ways that it will do that are through changing genetic expression. So getting back to prevention, diet. We all know that, hey, eat your vegetables. There's a study out there that they actually looked at what's called microRNA. So it's a small fraction of RNA, which comes from DNA. They followed that from broccoli through the gastrointestinal tract and were able to show that this actually gets into the bloodstream and turns on and off certain estrogen metabolization genes. So don't be surprised if you eat Twinkies and drink Cokes and eat Ding Dongs if you start to look and feel like one. We talk about food being, you know, soul food. Really, it's DNA food, but it's expression of your DNA. So when you eat greens, we do a plant-based diet here in an Oasis of Healing. When you eat a plant-based diet, you're basically, it's a love language with your genetic expression. It's what it really is. And so it is intimate to the prevention of cancer and any other chronic diseases of aging, but it's also intimate and necessary in the treatment.
Well, we were emailing back and forth a little bit about today's interview ahead of time, and one of your responses to something I'd mentioned was immune system, right? And that's both in regards to people who have cancer as well as people wanting to prevent cancer, and you talked about a plant-based diet. Can you talk a little bit more about how the immune system plays its role in the prevention of cancer and how the plant-based diet supports that?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to cancer, the way conventional medicine, and I'm conventionally trained, and it's really interesting when you look through the science. The science is what drives us practitioners to the natural. I mean, the science is what drives us there. It's not that we go there and the science catches up with us. But when you look at what the body does, the body is created to heal itself. The body is created to protect itself. And one of the key components of the body's ability to promote its survival is the immune system. The immune system is designed to protect the body against foreign invaders, bacteria, viruses, parasites, but it's also designed to protect us against domestic enemies, and that's things like cancer. So when you look at the immune system, most people have probably heard that, well, everybody has cancer cells. Well, why do we not all have cancer? Well, it's because our immune system is identifying, is tagging these cells, and it's eliminating them. When cancer develops, the problem is that cancer co-opts that defense mechanism and uses it to support itself, actually turns the immune system on itself so that it can actually survive, thrive, and spread. It is key to the prevention, and it is key to the elimination. I tell people that if you have the best answer for cancer is never get it. Never get it. Lifestyle changes, all of these things that we talk about are important and key to that. But even in taking those steps, we see people all the time come in and they go, I did all these things. I've eaten healthy. I've exercised. But I had this stress. I had this. I had that. You can't live in a bubble. It's life. The answer there, when you have cancer, is the immune system. It's not chemotherapy. It's not surgery. It's not radiation. Now, you got a tumor that's impending on a life vital organ, you got to do something, okay? But the answer is the immune system in prevention and in the treatment of cancer.
So you mentioned already a little bit about the immune system's role in identifying and targeting and basically removing these cancer cells, right? It happens a lot through the lymphatic system, also through, you know, our microbiome and so forth. And we've done a really great talk with Dr. Tom as part of this series. I encourage people to go listen to All About the Microbiome and its role in immunity and in helping to prevent reverse cancer. But maybe you can talk a little bit more about how and which plants are more effective. All plants, right, have some role. But maybe in terms of a plant-based diet, what do you guys teach your patients there at the center to help the body basically do its natural function of eliminating these cancer cells?
There's a lot of different plants, plant-based therapies that can be used in diet. Obviously, everybody focuses on things like curcumin, rightly so, first. You know, it's a spice, actually been in Ayurvedic medicine for thousands of years, actually turns off inflammation, but it does more than that. In cancer, there's a very significant chronic inflammatory response that is turned on that never turns off. Inflammation is not bad, and I think that's really important. I think as so many people talk about inflammation and cancer, they get lost that inflammation is necessary. If you've ever had a paper cut, you understand why. But curcumin comes in and really turns off this chronic aberrant inflammatory process. So there'll be this genetic coding called NF-kappa-B gets turned on. Curcumin comes in there and turns that off. But then as cancer starts to establish itself, curcumin can actually be used as treatment, but as a prevention, it's key in controlling that chronic and out of control inflammatory process. So it's great, great, great in prevention, but it's very effective in the treatment.
How do you take it? Do you, because I've heard that like if you're taking turmeric, for example, your body only absorbs often like 30% of their curcumin from the turmeric. Is that accurate? And how do you have your patients take it?
The bioavailability of curcumin, turmeric, is the source of curcumin. It's a root. its bioavailability, gastrointestinal, is very poor, just like vitamin C, very poor. So you want to dose it frequently. You want to dose it aggressively in dose. And typically, if you can get a lipophilic form, that will help.
Mm. Obviously, like the liposomal technology, basically.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It helps. But just like with vitamin C, what you have to do is you have to dose frequently. When you look actually at the studies, there's a lot of studies on curcumin and its anti-cancer effects. But if you actually just take the dosing required based on the studies, based on the weight, at one point in my career, I was giving people 32 capsules a day just of curcumin, 8 grams a day.
Wow.
Is what the literature was showing was an effective treatment. So obviously there's limitations that the delivery method provides, so through the gastrointestinal system. So what you can do there is just the best you can. What I tell people is definitely take curcumin supplements. If it's lipophilic, that's going to help, but just put it on everything. You have a salad, just put curcumin all over it. So for me, I just put it on everything that I eat, everything.
Tinctures as well, because obviously if you overdo it on the capsules, you're loading your gut up with all the plant cellulose capsule stuff too, right? Which is not ideal.
However, you can get it in and the frequency, that's the other thing. With its poor absorption and bioavailability, it's just the regular delivery that you
like five times a day, or like what does that look like?
Yeah, when I was giving these patients 32 pills a day, boy, that upset their stomach quite a bit.
I bet.
I had them taking that 4 times a day just so that they could get it in. So they were taking 8 capsules 4 times a day. I don't encourage people to do that. So please don't get me wrong there, but it's trying to get it in a frequency that you can do that you tolerate. But yeah, tinctures would be great too.
Yeah, I have a powdered tea that I make in the morning, and it's just great. Powdered organic turmeric. Put it in, and then I've got a liposomal CBD turmeric combination that's really powerful. Yeah, I love what you're saying. Just as many different forms as you can. I take it in some capsules as well, even though I'm reducing capsules just because too many in general.
That's why I tell people just put it on your food, or you know, put it in your milk nut in the morning, nut milk in the morning or in the afternoon. So lots of different ways that you can do that. I prefer people to eat their medicine.
Talk more about that. Can you talk more about that? Because often we find, you know, if we're trying to prevent cancer or even someone who has cancer, it's like we're often looking for that magic bullet, that one pill, that one treatment, that one thing. Though diet and nutrition is a lifestyle change, right? It's like if you want to eat a plant-based diet, a vegan diet, a raw food diet, like you have to learn how to do it and how to change what you're eating and also understand the underlying principles of what actually makes that diet healthy for you or not. So I know you guys have class. You still have classes there with your patients?
Oh, yeah.
How to make your food.
Yeah, curcumin is just one of those. Obviously, the cruciferous vegetables, the Brussels sprouts, the broccolis, you know, these are a mainstay in our diet. You know, Brazil nuts, selenium. People go, well, why the broccoli? Why the Brussels sprouts? Well, these greens turn off oncogenes. Oh, people go, oh, oncogenes. I think I've heard that. That is when many cases in cancer through this morphology and transformation that these cells will undergo, they will turn on these oncogenes. In many cases, it's because it's an adaption to its environment that is within the body. So things like broccoli and Brussels sprouts will turn these oncogenes off. They will also turn on what are called tumor suppressor genes. Roughly 70 to 80% of cancers are P53 positive cancer types, meaning that's a tumor suppressor gene that gets turned off. But more than just interacting with the genetic expression, which in and of itself is mind-blowing, that what we eat is actually telling our DNA to express something or not, it's actually looking at things like breast cancer and colorectal cancer. It's interacting with the estrogen and hormone metabolism. I mean, everybody knows that as it relates to breast cancer. And they go, well, I'll go take a capsule of DIM or indole-3-carbinol. And those are all great. But it's like, you know, it sure tastes a lot better if you just eat Brussels sprouts, if you just eat broccoli, cabbage. Those are the vegetables that will give you what you get in that DIM and indole-3-carbinol, but it just tastes better. Now, the problem then comes in when you have cancer is your stomach can't hold enough broccoli and Brussels sprouts to give you what you need. But if you're talking about it from prevention, oh, absolutely. That is the way to go. But it's paramount in the treatment. We just typically have to add more on top of that.
And you're doing that through fresh green juice, through IVs, through what other forms?
Yeah, we still have the courses that we do every morning interactive with our patients. We actually have them prepare some of their own food. Of course, nutrition is key. I talk to them about that. Our naturopath talks about that. People in the kitchen do that. We do some green juice every day. We want them to do 1 to 2 quarts fresh, very important fresh. And then what you put in there is very important. And then where we identify based on testing that they need extra support specific to their cancer type, then that's where we'll come in with very specific supplements, herbal extracts, tinctures to really take it to that next level. But yes, we do IVs as well with those where we need to and we're indicated to just take it to a whole nother level.
So what does the science say about some of the most toxic foods that people should avoid if they want to prevent cancer?
Yeah, I think people inherently know. They know that if they drive 120 miles an hour on a windy road, that's not a good smart move when it's snowing.
Let alone if it's not snowing.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, because we sure don't get that here. But people inherently know the foods that are healthy and those that are not. It's interesting. We got a fast food hamburger sitting in our didactic, so in our teaching room for our patients where they have classes every morning. And it's been there for several weeks now.
Jeez.
And so we're going to leave it there as long as it needs to stay there before it starts to degrade. But you can see the cheese, you can see the bread, you can see the meat. It hasn't changed in 2 weeks.
Oh my God, that is scary.
But that's not even food, okay? Right. But if it grows out of the ground, if it's from the earth, then it's something that's healthy. It's our bodies were designed to interact with this historically, epigenetically, our jaw structure. All of this is born out of our surrounding environment, not just inside, but outside. So if it grows out of the ground, it's from the earth. That's something that we need to be eating. And the more plant-based we do, the better. Things like, you know, like I mentioned earlier, Twinkies, Ding Dongs, Cokes. Look throughout nature. What do they drink other than water and milk at birth? That's it. What do we drink? No water, Coke, teas, everything else. So we are a product of nature, just as they are a product of nature. And so looking at us and saying, well, we can not drink water and drink Coke and have, you know, wine every night and think that that's not going to affect us, but we're just playing ourselves for a fool. So look at what animals do. Now we're not completely plant-based, but for the treatment of cancer, I advocate that. And I advocated for the prevention of it as well. But, you know, eat a plant-based diet. The foods that are inherent that are going to lead to disease and cancer are going to be, you know, your fast foods. It's going to be your heavy red meat production intake. It's going to be the sugars, the high simple carbohydrates, the trans fats, everything that we get through the TV, through the fast food restaurant. That's what we shouldn't be eating.
You know, I grew up on, you know, steak and potatoes in yeah. Bozeman, Montana. You know, we'd go hunting and fishing. And from that to actually eating a lot of fast food growing up as well. You know, my mom cooked from time to time, but then a lot of times we'd be eating at McDonald's and Burger King and Taco Bell, you know, for lunch every day. And all of this fake processed food, which over time, you know, made me quite sick and unhealthy. And it was right around the time my daughter was born in 2009, 2010, that we decided to go to 100% plant-based diet. We did 100% raw food for a year as well, because all the data, all the research, and all my own internal experimentation and my own intuition and reasoning and so forth said, look, this is the best diet for living long and healthy. And so since then, we're not 100% raw anymore, but we've been 100% plant-based, primarily vegan. And, you know, now my daughter's 10, my son is 5, and my wife and all of us have been plant-based since that time and are healthier and feel better, you know, sleep better, digestion issues, healed, all kinds of things. But someone who grew up in Montana on meat and potatoes, you know, I hear this argument for paleo, this argument for hunter-gatherer, this argument for, yeah, but we're supposed to eat meat because our ancestors ate meat. And maybe you can talk a little bit more about that and what the science tells us about eating meat.
Well, it's interesting. They say our ancestors ate meat, and they did, not denying that, but they didn't sit on their, you know, backside for 8 to 10 hours a day. They didn't, you know, they slept when the sun went down. They woke up and worked very hard when the sun came up. Yes, they had stress, but like a gazelle running from a lion, they either became dinner or they got away. So the stress was short. It was intense, but it went away. So you can't look at that and say, well, they did this. Well, I'm sorry, the environment we live in is different. They didn't deal with the environmental toxicants we have. So you can't say, well, they did this, so thus we should be able to do this. We're having to counter all the other things that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. You don't sleep well. Your melatonin doesn't normalize. Your immune system's compromised. Your cancer rate goes up. Studies on nurses working night shifts, flight attendants and pilots flying transatlantic flights, we know that is a key cancer-causing agent, not sleeping at night, low right. melatonin. That's why we do high-dose melatonin as a part of our therapies. Well, when the sun went down for them, they went to sleep. So they weren't dealing with that context. So we're trying to counteract all these other changes in our environment And that's really what the plant-based, and you're exactly right about the raw, and that's what we do for our patients when they come in here, that plant-based raw diet is to really very quickly to use these therapies as really medicine to counteract a dysfunctioning body. So we have to push very hard. We can't just say, well, let's just reduce our red meat. No, we have to push hard in our patients that come in here. So the plant-based diet is key, the raw is key, but it has to be taken in the context of the whole of the environment. You know, they weren't 350 pounds. You know, talking about food, you know, talking about fast food in high school, I can remember I'd go with three of my offensive line buddies. We'd go to McDonald's, hope I could say that, and they had 99-cent Big Macs.
Right.
And this was when I was 16, young and stupid. We'd buy four. We'd down those puppies in about 15 minutes. But you know, when I got through.
And then you were sick for the next 2 hours.
I didn't know what I was doing to my body, you know. But when I got through with football, because I played at about 290, two of the guys I played football with died within 7 years from massive heart attacks.
Wow.
And so I knew that I had to make a change there. And a move to the plant-based diet was natural. Honestly, it was what I was craving. You know, people think that cravings have no bearing on your health status. No, your body's going to make you go crave the things that it needs. So, yeah, so the raw food plant-based diet, it's interacting and countering all that other crap that we're dealing with our environment that they didn't have to deal with. So the argument is correct, but it's out of context.
Yeah, I love how you presented that. And, you know, it made me think of a couple of things as well, is if you look at a lot of our ancestral communities that date back thousands, tens of thousands of years, you know, a lot of them, at least what our science is saying today, is many of them didn't live past 35, 45 years old anyway. So that's one takeaway, right, that I think we should learn something from. And if you were hunter-gatherer at the time, there's not enough hunting, I think, to go around where you're going to be eating lots and lots of meat all day long, every day, right? Because it's really hard to hunt animals that run longer and faster than you do. Whereas gathering, and even now, there's a book that Greg Braden wrote that I read a few years ago called, I believe it's called Deep Truth. And there's a scientific discovery in there of a new civilization, an ancient civilization that was newly found in the last, I believe, 15 years, potentially, that dates back somewhere around 15 or 17,000 years old. What was really fascinating about this that has made me think more about and confirm more about, you know, yes, plant-based diet is the ideal diet for human beings. They never found a single weapon or hunting tool of any kind in this quite advanced civilization that had built, you know, their own lodgings and they believed even were growing food and things like that. Agrarian 15 or 17,000 years ago, which they believe, you know, until now, our historians and scientists didn't believe that, you know, people didn't become agrarian and grow their own food and they were hunter-gatherer until much later than that. So anyway, that's just a really, I think, just another confirmation, validity to the point that you're sharing. And
history will teach us so much if we'll listen to it. I mean, it really does. And, you know, you brought up an interesting visualization. I was thinking of just like the average adult male today chasing a gazelle, you know, trying to hunt it. And I was like, yeah, our ancestors probably would have done a much better job. We would all end up with heart attacks. But they also did a lot of fasting. And that's also a big part of what we do here. I mean, if there's a therapy that's more effective than fasting, I'm not aware of it. So, but they did it because food sources weren't available. There were famines. There were regular fasting just because of, you know, just because of crops, because of not available to, you know, access game that they were hunting or whatever. So what we try to do also is reincorporate that component of diet into their daily living. Now, we'll use it very aggressively as therapy as well. I mean, for days and days on end. But you can't really do anything else there if that's all you're doing. And I wouldn't advocate people to do water fasting without a physician guidance beyond just a day, because it can be incredibly hard on the body. But one of the things that they did, not intentionally, was that fasting. And that also, too, is incredibly powerful in helping the body to clean itself up, scavenger, get rid of all the junk, and then renew itself. And it actually has a name called autophagy. But this is where the body just goes in and says, I just don't need this anymore. I'm going to clean it up and get rid of it. So it's like a good spring cleaning every week or so. And that is critical to prevention and the treatment of cancer.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what does an ideal fasting regimen look like for somebody wanting to prevent cancer?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to do that. If you've never been exposed to the process of cancer, I hope nobody wants to be exposed to that, but be exposed to the process of fasting, I'd recommend people start off with just kind of like intermittent fasting. So taking, about 6 hours of the day to put your eating in to 12 to 6, and then take the other remaining hours of the day and just drink water. So I think that's a good way for people to start off and experience it. If you can't do the 6 hours, an 18-hour fast, then do 10. Just find your happy spot and just slowly build your way up. Many different cultures, fasting is already a part of their environment. Right. And so I can tell them, hey, do water fasting 24 hours once a week. All right, no problem. But if you take the typical American and say, I want you to do water fasting one day a week, they're going to go, well, you mean don't eat anything? It's like, yeah, just drink water. They're like, is that healthy? You bet. So I recommend people start off in a prevention standpoint. If they've not really used that, use it in the intermittent fasting and then build yourself up to a one day of fast a week. Cultures have done this for thousands of years. They would water fast regularly as a part of religious ceremonies. Mm-hmm. And so build yourself to a intermittent fasting to once a week, one day a week, and then build into, once every 3 to 6 months, where you do a 3-day water fast. Obviously, I think it's important to have a doctor involved to make sure there's no unknown issues in your body, kidney dysfunction, et cetera. But you can really be doing some regular spring cleaning throughout your body by just doing that alone.
Yeah, intermittent fasting is huge, right? And I think the data is 12 to 14 hours is kind of like minimum to start really getting the detoxification benefits and, some of the ketosis benefits and so forth, right? But as you said, that can be really hard for people at first to go 12 or 14 or 16 hours. But try it, as you're saying, just start doing it. I've been doing fasting and cleansing for over 10 years, 12, 13 years, 14 years. I've done all kinds of cleanses and fasts and up to 21 days. And one of my favorite things, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, is to go for a week or 2 weeks, kind of 10 days I find is like a sweet spot, but I've gone up to 3 weeks of green juice feasting. Right. Yeah. So you're fasting from everything else, but you're
Have you been a patient here?
I've been a student of Dr. Lodi and a student there. I've actually visited you guys' amazing healing center and have learned a lot. So I love juice feasting, green juice feasting.
Yeah, juicing is incredible. First of all, it's gonna if you tend towards constipation, it's gonna definitely help take care of that. It's going to basically get the lead out, if you will. But yeah, I think mixing in the juicing with the fasting, people want to take vitamins. That is like the ultimate vitamin, not just for your physical body, but for your soul. I mean, I drink a quart every day.
Fresh green juice?
Fresh green juice.
What are your favorite, what's one of your favorite recipes?
Well, of course, we have our recipe on our website. So go to our website and check it out. A little shameless plug there. Mm-hmm. But I like to, my wife's from Louisiana. So I like to spice things up a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I like to take that and add some jalapenos to it. So that's my favorite recipe. We got the little green apples, the cucumbers, the kale, spinach. And then I like to throw some jalapenos in that. And for me, that extra spice, sometimes I like to add some ginger in there, but I like things spicy. So that's kind of my favorite recipe.
So fresh green juice every day, intermittent fasting at least once a week, work up to a 1 day fast, water yeah. fast or green juice fast every week. These are all great, you know, and the other prevention protocol you've shared is plant-based diet, right? Adding more and more fresh plants to your diet. You shared a lot about turmeric, curcumin, adding that in higher doses. As we wrap up here, you know, what other maybe one or two kind of top prevention protocols would you recommend to people?
Yeah, these are going to sound, oh yeah, I've heard that, but it's very important. Cancer is a state of dysfunction, but also a state of deficiencies. Vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin C. These three very powerful vitamins are always deficient in cancer, always. And so what I would say is make sure that your vitamin A, vitamin D, and vitamin C levels are adequately supported in your diet and your lifestyle. So obviously vitamin D, get out and get in the sun. You're talking about our ancestors. You know, my father-in-law is 88 years old. He doesn't have skin cancer and he worked outside every day of his life. He never had skin cancer. So we need to expose ourselves to the sun, but we also have to recognize that there's a limit and a time that we need to protect ourselves against that. So vitamin D, vitamin A, you get that in your diet. So, you know, get that in your diet through the, you know, the green and non-green vegetables. Obviously, you eat a plant-based diet, you're going to get all these vitamins there. You're going to get it by exposure to the sun. And then vitamin C, cancer is essentially metabolic scurvy. Your vitamin C levels are going to be depleted, and that is going to compromise your immune system just like what vitamin D will. It's really interesting. If you look at the COVID issue, vitamin D and vitamin C have both been shown to be effective in counteracting the inflammatory response in the cytokine storm that happens. That same process happens in cancer.
Mm-hmm.
That right. same immune burst happens in cancer. So vitamin D, vitamin C are critical. Obviously, vitamin C, you get that through your diet because we don't make vitamin C. Our bodies cannot make it. We lack an enzyme to do that. So we have to eat that in our diet. In a plant-based diet, some fruits are going to help us to achieve that.
Well, that's the thing. You can't get those vitamins, those essential vitamins that you need from animal products, right? You don't get them from meat. You have to get them from plants.
That's right. That's the foundation. If you look at it, the plant, it's like the foundation of a home. And our body is the, you know, two-story home. Well, what if you have a weak foundation, it doesn't matter how beautiful that kitchen or second-story balcony is. It's going to collapse. The foundation is that plant-based diet. That's the foundation. That's where all of these critical minerals, vitamins, we haven't even talked about zinc and selenium, how they are what build our immune system, keep it strong so that our bodies can fight off enemies, both foreign and domestic.
Well, Dr. Goodyear, I just want to say thank you so much for sharing all this great knowledge and wisdom for us. Thank you for the great work you do. I do encourage people to check out An Oasis of Healing. It is an incredible center if you're looking for an integrative, truly integrative approach to not only transform your lifestyle habits, but maybe help a loved one through cancer. Look them up, anoasisofhealing.com. Dr. Goodyear, thank you so much. Appreciate all that you shared with us here today.
You bet. Thank you for the opportunity, Nathan.
Yeah, my pleasure. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in here to the Global Cancer Symposium. Make sure to share this interview with anyone who needs this life-changing information. Make sure to visit anoasisofhealing.com. You can learn more about working with Dr. Goodyear and his team there in Arizona. Also, I encourage you to visit healthandhealingclub.com to join the global membership dedicated to helping you get and stay healthy. Again, I'm Nathan Crane. I wish you ultimate health and happiness. Take care.